After making all that sweet church money with 2004's hit, The Jesus Chainsaw Massacre, Mel Gibson picked another obscure language and ordered even more blood. And we still went to see it. Apocalypto was the number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Movie in America.
Movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Hi, my name's Sean Collier. This is the number one movie in America. I am here with two people who just got their lunch pulled 10 feet to the left. It's Camila Adams.
Oh my God. I hate that we have to do the staggering things now because I've forgotten things about this. Nothing's no longer
the
fresh.
Toy. We talked about the toy
right.
Boy
Hi.
Greg thing. And Robin Hitchcock.
I had the same reaction. I was like, what?
It's like, did we watch the Goonies or was there a bully story? I don't.
Turns out the toy is forgettable. Even the people who, popped up on social media to be like, I have fond memories were like, I remember this movie. It's probably not holding up too well today, but I sure remember watching it. Yeah, that's all you can ask for.
Right.
Yeah. Again, we laugh.
Sure. It lands in 55th place on the big chart. Very close to the middle. It got a 51. That's right in between The Time Machine. We gave a 52. The Sum of All Fears. We gave a 50.75. As a reminder, our true average, the most average movie we have watched, remains The Deep at 50. The Deep is a perfect 50. It is neither a good nor bad movie. And seven, still in seven. But this week, I am interested because, I don't know where everyone's going to come down on Apocalypto, but I'll bet you can't not react to it. That's for sure.
That's a true statement.
And I was the only one who had seen this previously. So, initial thoughts.
Woof. Like, I mean, now I know this is like really weird coming from a horror film fan, but I'm just like, this shit is fucking traumatic. Yeah. I didn't like it. I didn't like it at all. And it's like a lot of it I couldn't take.
I regret everything. I spent so much time while watching this movie being like, why didn't you turn your veto key?
Same. I was like, this would have been a perfect, most blessed use for a veto.
I mean, at the end of the day, like, the reason I did it is I was like, I'm curious about it and it satisfied my curiosity and I'm interested to talk about it, but I hated watching it.
I'm mad at myself for being curious about it to be like, hey, yeah, let's see what could go wrong? What could happen? sure. Let's watch it. Go ahead. Nah.
I mean, I kind of like it, but we'll get into it. I think at the baseline, every now and then I watch one of those like infamous type horror movies, like something that is, influential or important or was just so shockingly shocking at the time that that's why it's like Blood Feast or Blood Sucking Freaks or Cannibal Holocaust or one of those. And they're never good, but it's always like, well, I'm glad I know what that is now.
Why?
People thought they actually put heads on a pike like you see in this film.
Yeah.
Was it Cannibal Holocaust?
I think you're thinking of Cannibal Holocaust.
Okay.
Because Cannibal Holocaust has great, very realistic effects. And the thing that throws people off is that Cannibal Holocaust is also infamous because the scenes of animals being killed are just real.
Oh.
So it really gets your brain going into like, what am I looking at?
No, thank you.
Very dark.
I'm not big on cannibal anything, so I generally tend to like steer clear from that kind of horror and all that stuff. And it's also, it's like when humanity is in question And I know this is a different time period and all that. It's a different civilization. It's a different culture and everything. And that's not necessarily the inhumane ways of treating, but we'll get deep into that. But it's just like when humanity is questioned and things are done to one another like this, like when you get to like end of the world, like actual like apocalypse movies, like, you know, when people are like really turning terrible on each other, that like really fucks with me mentally.
Me too. But that's like why I struggle with Seven, which you love.
I know, right?
Is it maybe like it's on an individual level more so with Seven as opposed to like systemically people are bad?
I don't know. I'll get back to you on that one. I'll have to dig deep on that one.
Let's get to the segments, and then I'm going to step back because both I have the recap, so it's going to be a lot from me. And then I'll give the floor for a while because I feel like we need to establish what this movie is, because I also feel like this movie has completely left the cultural consciousness. I there couldn't be a more forgotten movie from 15 years ago.
I'm surprised it was a number one. I don't know if it ever was in the cultural consciousness.
I'm like, who saw this movie?
Exactly.
People like me who were like, I mean, I want to know. But before we get to those facts, the 60-second recap, for the first time, I forgot it was mine, so I'm going to wing it. Good luck making sense of the movie from what I'm about to say. Somebody tell me when to go.
Go.
Okay, we're in the Mayan Empire. We are not in a city. We are in a rural village in the jungle where Jaguar Paw is the son of the chief. He is starting to reckon with the fact that he has to lead his tribe into the future. They catch a taper. They trick the doofy guy into eating the taper's balls because he can't get his wife pregnant. Everybody has a good laugh. The old man tells stories around the campfire at night. While they were killing the taper, a battered and bloody group of people from another neighboring tribe walked through, and they were like, our village was ravaged. Jaguar Paw is worried about it. His dad, the chief, not particularly concerned. Oops, the next morning, soldiers from the nearest major city show up, destroy the village, kill a lot of people, and take a whole bunch of slaves on a long journey back to... Oh, there's no chance. Long journey back to their big city. Jaguar Paw hides his pregnant wife and child in a pit for some reason. Every now and then we check in with them. They go to the city. Some people get sacrificed. Jaguar Paw is about to get sacrificed, but then there's an eclipse. Instead, they're used for target practice. Jaguar Paw gets away, gets chased by a literal jaguar. He kills a bunch of the people because he knows the jungle really well. White people show up and they go, oh shit, we're screwed. The end.
About 90 seconds.
Yeah.
It's a It's difficult when you have to wing it because you get caught up in that epic fucking journey through the jungle.
I truly thought this movie was over after he escaped the ritual sacrifice. And there are 50 more minutes after that.
I would have kept that. I would have gotten rid of the long, like the 40 minutes between our village was destroyed and we get to the city. Right. But nothing happens.
Right. It's just more fucking torture and mayhem and just like, fucking Mel Gibson, man. What is your deal? Like,
what is his damage? Seriously. Like, Colin was mad at me that I didn't veto this because Mel Gibson is a Mel racist Gibson, right. Anti-Semite abuser.
Right.
All of that, just, I know it's probably related, but like, I am worried about this man's relationship to violence.
Right? Like, why does it have to be so much of it in these films? Like, As you know, with the Passion of the Christ, you know, we're doing the walk to the crucifixion and everything. And that's like, that takes years to get through. And there's like, just like fucking whippings upon lashings upon blood upon gore. It's just like, what's happening, Mel? Like, seriously, has he sat down with a therapist? I would.
And when Definitely he acts not. In movies, he typically himself gets tortured.
Hmm.
Like, he gets tortured in Lethal Weapon. He gets tortured in Conspiracy Theory. He gets tortured in Payback. He gets tortured in Braveheart. Like, it's the Patriot. Like, he just is into violence.
So basically, he's got some sort of S&M dungeon somewhere is what we're...
That's exactly what I was going to say. Not to project an honest kink onto someone in a way that sounds like I'm judging.
Right.
But I guarantee that he has worn big sunglasses and a low-fitting baseball cap and gone to some club where someone is tortured. His chief interest as a filmmaker is muscular male nude bodies in agony. That is in Braveheart. That is literally Jesus. That is all over this movie, and it's in Hacksaw Ridge. That's four of the five movies he's directed. Wow. He loves male. I hope you like male butt cheeks, because that is the main attraction of Apocalypto.
You know, like, and I don't.
He is so into pain on flesh.
Yeah, that's a. I think you're onto something there, Sean. That's Mel's thing. That's his kink. And again, you know, not judging anybody who's like honestly into that kind of stuff. But I wish Mel would kind of keep it out of his work. I mean, like, or just go ahead and just do your fucking, do porn.
It's especially frustrating because, again, it's like, we don't mean to kink shame. And right. A lot of the people, I would say the majority of the people into that stuff are not racist, anti-Semite abusers. And so he's a very bad face.
Yeah, for that. Movement. Right. Like, they're like, we don't want him. Like, no, thank you.
Here's all I'm going to say about Mel Gibson, asshole. You know, the thing that blows my mind is when you're in that class of people who are probably terrible people, but fundamentally, in terms of what you got caught doing, was just yelling some slurs.
Right.
Mel, Hulk Hogan, Michael Richards, like people who are like, you're probably bad, but all you're really on record doing is you said some things and got caught. You know, you can just come out and say, you know what? That was terrible of me. I think it probably means I have a lot that I need to, you know, check within myself, and this does not reflect well on me, and I'm going to go learn and be better. Instead, all of those people I just named are like, no, that's not who I am. Don't worry about it. Oh, that's right. Not who I am. This is why it's okay that I said that, because that's not who I am. You just have to come out and say, that's who I am, and it's a problem, and I'm going to work on it.
Right.
That's what you need to do now.
Also, unfortunately, I'm very much in a place, and maybe I need to work on this, where I'm like, I don't believe you.
That they're going to work on it, or that.
Yes, but also like, oh, it just happened this one time.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I had low blood sugar.
There's no fucking way. There is no fucking way that you just accidentally caught somebody. Like, nah, just because you needed a candy bar. Nah, dude, that sips on the tip of your tongue always.
Right. And also, it's not like there was one incident. Like, I think that the two big things with Mel Gibson are that time he got the DUI and also the tape of him abusing his ex-wife.
Right.
But those aren't the only two.
Right.
No, there's he's got plenty. But that's what I'm saying. Even if you don't mean it, act like you know you're a piece of shit, and then we'll feel a little better, you know?
Yeah.
Don't get caught and then not show some ass.
Right.
Not in the way that this movie's full of ass, but
so much ass.
I do wish that I could know what I would think about this movie if I didn't know Mel Gibson was involved, or if I didn't know that Mel Gibson is a bad person.
I'd feel the
same. I still think I would have hated watching it, but I think I might have respected it a little bit.
Because,
I definitely... This is an epic.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? Like, there were things about it where I was like, wow, they don't make them like they used to. And, like... And maybe that, again, you know, is about not having been in the movie theater for a year. Like, but a lot of the huge scale scenes, I was like, holy shit, this is incredible. Like, that shot of the guy jumping off the waterfall, like, it literally took my breath away. I still hated watching this. And I also think that it is deeply problematic in a series of ways. I don't know how much we want to go into that.
For me, it's just another tale of marginalized people's death, slavery, and trauma. And so that's just kind of where there's just nothing. I understand the story that's being told, but I just feel like it, and I'm not looking to sugarcoat anything either, but there's just so much fucking pain in this movie that I can't take it. And it's like I had to fast forward a lot. Just like, you know, like the first the scenes. Have. Yeah, like the scenes were like when they first come to and like get the village and get and capture the village and all everybody's screaming and what it's just I had to walk away from that for a day. Like I was like
specifically against the women and children, just but also like aside from that, and that's such an important point. The story that this movie is telling is kind of fucked up and racist.
Right.
Because like the opening quotation, like the title card, I pulled it up so I would get it right.
You'd have a lot easier path arguing for this movie without that opening quotation.
Yeah. So it is a great civilization is not conquered from without until it has destroyed itself from within.
The fuck?
Yeah. So, and then it has this bizarre ending where, you know, the guy finally gets free and then sees the conqueror ships on the horizon.
Right.
Reminded me, I've never actually seen this movie, but the Robert Pattinson movie where at the end it's like, and it's 9/11.
Yeah.
That is what right. I felt like this was.
Yeah.
Basically, it's so fucked up to be like, well, it doesn't matter that we destroyed this civilization because they were already on their way to destroy it themselves.
Right.
And there's also just like the way that, and you know, I'm saying this as an educated American white lady, but like the way that white people talk about Maya culture is so weird because it's very much like, can you imagine that these brown people had cities? You know what I mean? It's like, oh right. my goodness,
right.
they had lawyers? I thought we invented that. And so then there feels like they're relishing in the fact that, oh, but they fucked it up with their backwards savagery.
This is interesting. And this might be a good place to figure out who the fuck saw this movie in our Faxi segment.
Yeah. Forgot about the Faxi segment. Thank you.
That's fine. That's the thing. There's a lot to unpack here, and it doesn't get... You don't find good things when you're going through that box. And just to respond to Camila's point first, yeah, I'm going to give this movie a positive score. But that is a case of going, this is a good movie. It shouldn't exist. I think he's doing a good job with this project. I think he is, you know, I'm one of those people that thinks fundamentally it comes down to, did you do what you were setting out to do? And I think he did. I think he absolutely did. It just, that's not a good thing to do.
Right.
But you know,
the question is, the question wasn't, should you have done it? The question is, did you do
it? Right. He's obsessed with sequences that are powerful and terrible to look at. That one you're talking about, when they really are ravaging the village, is an incredibly powerful sequence. There are sequences like that in Braveheart. That's the whole last hour of Passion of the Christ. Mm. It's powerful. No one should watch it. It's not like a thing you should put into your brain, but it's power, you know, anyway.
Would you say that about the first 40 minutes of Saving Private Ryan?
I think that's a little different because Saving Private Ryan is in pursuit of a bigger story. Whereas I think in Mel Gibson movies, the brutality and violence often is the story. Mm. He said as much about Passion of the Christ, that the mission of Passion of the Christ is to illustrate how terrible what Jesus endured was as a test of, you know, to make people more firm in their faith or whatever bullshit he says about that movie.
And
the violence is the point. With
Mel. I've made the argument that some movies... Like Schindler's List is a great example of a movie where I'm like, fundamentally, this is about making you sit with pain. And I do think that there is a value in that kind of storytelling. But I hear what Camila is saying about how it is hugely overused.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's tell you about it. Apocalypto was released December 8th, 2006, the 38th number one movie of the year. Its opening weekend with a kind of a soft $15 million. There were three other wide releases that weekend. The Holiday finished in third. Blood Diamond finished in fifth. Unaccompanied Minors finished in seventh. It's the only time it'll come out. So, Robin, do you have anything to say about Blood Diamond?
Really, really bad South African accent from Leo. Like, astonishingly terrible.
Apocalypto fell all the way to sixth in its sophomore weekend. That is a big drop.
Wow,
there were three debuts. In order, the top three were The Pursuit of Happiness, Aragon, and Charlotte's Web. Apocalypto then further dipped below the previous week's number one movie in America, Happy Feet, and even fell below The Holiday, despite beating it by two spots in its debut weekend. So it's what we're saying. People were curious. That curiosity wore off immediately. In fact,
and they warned
those were
people.
The only 2 weekends it was in the top 10. A lot more came out the next weekend, but Apocalypto was, I believe, in 12th. Dipping below stuff it had previously beat. It lost to Blood Diamond in that third weekend. It lost to the sixth weekend of Casino Royale. Just fell off a cliff. Made $50.8 million, the 63rd top grossing film of the year. It did a little bit better globally. It was a number one movie in its semi-native Mexico. It's a number one movie in Mexico as well.
The sequel to number one movie in America.
So it ends... Right. That's... Hey, why not? We'll get some interesting stuff. It is fourth among the five Mel Gibson-directed movies in terms of its gross. Passion of the Christ is obviously first, $370.2 million.
Wow.
Followed by Braveheart, 75.6. I would have assumed Braveheart made more than that.
Hmm.
Hacksaw Ridge is third, 67.2, Apocalypto. And then Man Without a Face, $24.7 million.
I don't actually like that movie.
I was going to say, I feel like that's the best movie that he's directed by,
right,
like, a big amount.
Exactly. Out of all of them, that's the only one that I would ever revisit.
That's the only one I haven't seen.
It's worth watching.
Is it literally about a guy without a face?
Yeah. Sort of. Like, he has got, like, a half, like, a burnt face kind of thing, and he befriends this little boy in the neighborhood. And, you know, it's kind of heartwarming, kind of. Not a lot of pain and not a lot of physical pain and tragedy happening, other than what he already endured before we see him.
Skip them all. Watch Maverick. Maverick's fun. The Passion of the Christ remains the 47th top grossing film of all time, by the way, and is still the top grossing R-rated movie of all time. Deadpool came close, couldn't get there.
I thought Joker beat it.
I don't believe. I'll double check when we're talking later, but I don't think Joker passed it. Maybe globally, but not domestic. The reception to Apocalypto was lukewarm, but mostly positive. Most of the reviews were basically, it's got problems, but it is an interesting movie. A lot of recommendations. Ebert was done at that point, but Roper and someone unexpected that was, I think it was Aisha Tyler, was guest hosting, and they gave it 2 thumbs up. It had some very high marks from certain critics. People within the industry loved it. Tarantino, Scorsese, and Spike Lee all went out of the way to rave about Apocalypto.
I remember Tarantino being a huge advocate for this movie, and I was like, that tracks.
Yeah. For some reason, Robert Duvall came out to say it was the best movie he had seen in 25 years. Expensive baubles. 3 Academy Award nominations
makeup,
for Apocalypto.
Right?
It was nominated for makeup. It lost to Pan's Labyrinth.
Oh, okay. That's fair.
Fine nominee, better win. Somehow the third nominee that year was Click, the Adam Sandler comedy. I don't know. Someone
age makeup.
There was probably some old age makeup. And both sound awards, sound editing and mixing. Interestingly, the 4 losers matched exactly in those categories. Apocalypto, Blood Diamond, Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Man's Chest, and Flags of Our Fathers were the 4 losers in both editing and mixing, with different winners. Robin, any guesses for 2006?
2006? Letters from Iwo Jima?
Correct. One sound editing and sound mixing was...
Dreamgirls?
Correct.
Wow.
Look how good she is.
Wow. That is impressive.
Due to the Minari loophole, it was nominated for Best Foreign Language Film at the BAFTAs, the SAG Awards, and the Critics' Choice Awards. Did not win any of those. And a very short word on historical accuracy. This is obviously several chunks of the Wikipedia page. You can guess. It's remarkably accurate in some ways, pastiche accurate in some other ways, borrowing things from different time periods. And most of the ways that it is not accurate are to turn up the violence. Most of the things that are glaringly wrong are like
practical jokes.
At this time, these people weren't. What's that?
Like the practical jokes, like in the beginning when they like the whole the bold balls or whatever. I was like, so the Mayans. they were practical jokes in 1502.
I believe that all civilizations have a strong practical joke contingent. I think that is fundamental to the human condition along the lines of dance and smiles.
Okay.
This is certainly the only number one movie in America that begins with someone eating raw balls. That has to be this one and only this one.
The blowjob joke you mentioned last week.
Yes.
What was that? It was somebody gave a blowjob after eating a hot pepper?
Yeah, it kind of was glossed over. But then so Jaguar Pa's dad is like, I'm sorry they're messing with you. Here, you put this stuff on your junk if you're trying to get your lady pregnant. And then later that night, he runs out of the tent trying to cool off his junk because it was like cayenne pepper. And she runs out of the tent, but she's not rubbing her junk. She's rubbing her face.
Right. Okay. I thought she did it to him, but it was actually his dad did it to him, which yikes.
Wow.
I was impressed with her. I was like, that's commitment to the bit.
No.
The main thing that people criticized about the inaccuracy of this film was that the actual ritual that they show is not from Maya culture at all, right?
Yeah, what they're doing there is much more in line with Aztec sacrifices. The historian type guy who was employed by this movie, so thus had a vested interest to come up with a rationalization, said, yes, towards the end of the Mayan Empire, there were more sacrifices. There was more inter-empire violence. So it's not entirely inaccurate. It's just wildly inflated to make for a more violent movie.
The other thing about the focus on human sacrifice in Central American culture is I'm like, I don't know. You guys know that we kill people in America all the time.
Right, just because you don't put
an audience to it.
Right, just because you don't call it a sacrifice and we're not just like, oh, this is to the gods so we can have better crops. No, this shit happens all the time. Yeah. And also I was wondering, like, how long was this happening? Because it felt like this was just like an all day every day kind of thing, like with like the amount of heads that were just like being tossed. Like five heads rolled down that staircase while those dudes, when they got there upon arrival, it was like, so y'all just do this all the time?
And there were like 20 people in line behind Jaguar Paw right. when the sun went away. Right. Like, and then also when he runs away and he runs into that field of corpses, it was like, how is there anyone left?
Right.
Extreme.
Hell of a shot, though, when he falls into the thing and then it pans back and it's all the bodies. That's what I'm saying. Everything here, if I'm stepping back and going like, how's the filmmaking? I'm like, it's pretty great. Why the fuck did you do this? But it's good.
No, it's like, it's amazing. It's, I give a lot of props to like cinematography. Like, it's gorgeous. Yeah. There's a lot of beautiful shots, beautiful scenery, like the costuming and the set design and everything that's happening. The fact that they were Native American and indigenous Mexican actors were all of the people. Like, I go ahead and give you your props for that. Not like bringing in some, you know, some white folk for brown face for these roles. But yeah, but still, it's just like, we're just going to have to leave it at, I am an emotional raider, as we have found. So we'll get there.
One thing I'm not sure works is using the ancient language, because it makes everything feel a little stilted. And I wonder, again, it wouldn't be historically accurate, but I wonder if using a present day indigenous language from that area might have worked better, because the actors would be more readily expressing themselves. Mm. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's a place where I'm like, just that is a place to sacrifice historical accuracy from my perspective. I've never seen The Passion of the Christ, and I don't know how much that happens in that movie. That's, it's an Aramaic,
I think it's,
right?
Yeah, I think I'm pretty sure I recall it being the whole movie.
Right. So I've never seen that movie. I'm curious if it has if I would have the same reaction to it. I don't know. There were just certain lines in this film where I was like, it feels like they're reading from a cue card in a way that I don't think it should.
Yeah. Because, I mean, when you get into stuff like this, like, I don't know how many dialect coaches there are that teach the Maya language.
There's only so much you can do with teaching a essentially dead language.
Right. And so, like, everybody's just basically phonetically, like, doing stuff. And, you know, a lot of these things, you know, I'm sure it's not a direct interpretation or a direct translation of what they're saying in the language, as opposed to what we're reading on the terrible fucking subtitle font, terrible font, terrible color.
That's a very good point.
So there is, I feel you when you talk about, like, there's kind of like a disconnect.
Yeah. And I mean, that is also just a very American perspective of like, speak my language, to go back to the loophole.
But no, but still, because like, if they were speaking Spanish, like, I'm not fluent in Spanish, I understand enough Spanish, but it's also like, you know, just a lot of the things, like, there would be some feeling, a little more feeling there where, for the actors to connect with what they're saying, you know, because you got somebody teaching you Spanish, basically.
Right. Well, I mean, this was before Spain. I feel like I don't think that this movie should be in English or Spanish.
I'm just using Spanish as an example like something we know.
This is one of those opinions that I have where I'm like, I think I'm wrong. Like, for example, in our last episode when we were talking about Abracadabra, and I was like, I like that song, even though it's bad. I'm like, I don't think this movie should be in a dead language, even though I might be wrong.
No, it's certain. Look, you don't, when we make a movie about King Arthur, it's not in Old English, just flex. Like, this is still a weird choice. He got into time period specific languages. That's weird. I mean, okay, but, you know, it's not like inherently good. It's just an odd decision.
Right.
And it has that effect. It's, yeah, it's not like it's, you know, relatable. And I think that, you know, I think that it is at best muddled about the point that it is making, because Mel, for his skill as a mechanical director and as a emotional director, he can't think through things. Like, that entire sequence around the human sacrifice, I'm like, this is a very strong argument for how blind religious devotion leads to barbarism and creates an, you know, privileged ruling class. You don't think that, Mel Gibson. Why are you convincing me of it in this scene? Like, with the little fat kid who's smiling at all the people dying, I'm like, yeah, this is a good argument for it. You ran right into the point and missed it. Like, this is a very muddied argument in as much as it's any kind of argument.
I did love the bored teenager up on the sacrifice platform who's like, I hate that I have to be here.
Ugh, sacrifice again.
The thing that was jumping out to me during that sequence is just projecting to Jaguar Paw's point of view for a minute. Like, today, your village was burned and you were kidnapped, but then you were brought to the first city you've ever seen, you were nearly murdered, and then the sun went away. Like, what are you thinking at this? And 3 hours from now, some people that look like fancy ghosts to you are going to roll in on dragon ships. Like, man! This guy's after
you, right? Which is, is why, you know, when they see them in the horizon, they're like, nah, I can't do one more thing today. I'm just I literally cannot right now, guys.
I did like that the spooky child who was like, and here's what's gonna happen next, prophecy, called the eclipse, that he I can't remember, said that they will cancel the sky.
Guys, culture has been happening for decades, for centuries. Guys, we're not, this is nothing new. As my grandmother would say, there's nothing new under the sun.
Yeah. I did also, I kind of liked the way that they showed the crowd react to the eclipse, like, yikes, and then, okay, yay, the sun's back.
Right.
And then I love Jaguar Parr's face where he's like gets in the tree and he hides and he looks and there's a jaguar cub there. Because in any language, at any time period, his face is just like, fucking come on. Jeez, now. Jesus. All right. Now I'm running from a jaguar. Shit. I love the creepy child. And I love the dream sequence right before they get ravaged with the guy from the other village. And he's freaking out and he tells him run. That's really good. I like that a lot. I also liked that the doofus guy turned out to be the best fighter. That was nice.
I must have fast forwarded that.
The only other thing I have to ask is that how pits work vis-a-vis water in them? First, one, if it rains a lot, can an entire massive pit fill up with water in 20 minutes? Like, does that water, does it just fill like a tub? And two, can't you swim up? Can you swim up if you're in a pit
that a
with
thing?
Water?
Is that a thing? You get to swim? Mayas?
Buoyancy was not invented until the 18th century, so.
Yeah, I've always wondered that about pits as well, Sean. Like, I kind of feel like at some point, doesn't the earth absorb a lot of that water? Like, wouldn't it kind of like some point, I'm not saying that it just like soaks it up like a sponge completely, but I just feel like, you know, it would have taken a little bit longer for that pit to fill up.
Geologists, meteorologists, please weigh in on this. I think that a flash flood would fill up a pit that deep with water.
Yeah, pit experts. Experts in the behavior of
pitologists, if you will.
Please let us know.
Not to be confused with Brad Pitt enthusiasts. But
those are pittites.
It really did feel though like that plot like got like tacked on, that they were like, oops, we forgot to put a woman in the movie. Like, I don't know if you guys have ever seen Silent Hill, but do you know that the Sean Bean scenes were filmed, they like went into reshoots because the studio was like, hey, you guys realize that no men talk in this movie, right? And they were like, all right, let's get Sean Bean in and we'll do a framing story.
God, I saw that a long time ago, but I don't remember. Now I'm going to have to go back.
It's not good.
Nah, never mind. I'll take your word for it.
We know that the pit scenes are original because, of course, you can't give a man steaks unless a pregnant lady is involved.
Right.
The most important thing of all, a pregnant lady.
Yeah, what other reason would he have to get back to his home? Like, you know, he has to save his baby mama.
He kind of just not wanted to have his heart ripped out and then have his head thrown down some stairs. But no,
I mean,
that's
like, that was not enough, Sean.
I did reach a point with like oversaturation of violence where I laughed out loud when one of the bodies fell down after the head.
Oh my God.
It was like, rip out the heart, roll the head down, and then roll the body down. I was like, okay.
they had a big head catching net, and they caught it with like a flourish, like they're in Cirque du Soleil.
This is what I'm saying. Like, this is the whole fucking thing. Like, these dudes have had like hours upon days to like perfect their head, their decapitated head catching skills. Like, they're down there fucking. This is a game. Ugh, the whole thing. It's just so much. So much tragedy.
Well, how many points is that tragedy worth to you? I'm gonna go first so I don't get shamed into lowering it as we go. Sometimes I want it the other way. Sometimes I want to be convinced to lower it, but I want to stand by it's a good movie that shouldn't exist. So with an automatic 2-point bonus for a scene of a toddler playing with a small monkey, it gets a 68. I go 68. Robin?
I'm going to go 24. And three of my points are for when the big tree fell down and the guy said, I'm walking here. And five of those points are for the waterfall shot. And wait, I had another plus one. Oh, it was for the bored teenager.
15.
Oh, wow. Because that's sort of where I started, and then I was adding points for the things I liked. I
started at 2, actually. Like, when I pressed play, I was like, I don't want to watch this movie. And then the whole balls thing happened. I was like, what?
I literally said out loud, why did I do this to myself?
Well, that lands us on 35 2/3. That's pretty low. We came very close to it being half of the score I gave it. 35 2/3 overall. To a brand new bingo card. Camila, take us through.
All right. So because it never happened in like 47 bingo cards, I decided to take off the on-screen American president. And I'm assuming next movie will be American president. But I took it off. So what we have now is we have a square for taxi slash Uber. We've got bicycle, skateboard, or roller skates. A film takes place in a New England state. We're still waiting out for Sean's crush. We have still the quote, "Do you trust me?" and the quote, "I didn't sign up for this." I've added live stage show, which can be either the focal point or just happening in the background. Scene in a library. Total score lower than 40. I think we know where that.
Which we just hit.
Right, exactly.
Total score lower than 40. Congratulations, Apocalypto.
We've got babysitter. Character puts shoes on. Yeah, and still some of the old ones too. But yeah, the only one I retired was the American president on screen.
I think we also have to count character climbs up many stairs. I know it was more going down the stairs just ahead, but they had to climb a lot of stairs to get to the top of the thing.
I will.
And they were on them.
I'll allow it.
That is the only two I have, unless you count the beheadings as a live stage show.
I'm going to go no. I was looking for something a little bit more, with more costumes, perhaps some lights.
Oh, they had great costumes in that show, but nevertheless. Well, we're running a little long. We're going to forgo You Can't Handle the Truth because we have everybody's favorite occasional subject, segment, topic, the movie draft.
It's a movie draft, ladies and gentlemen.
Robin and I both hit bingo last week. And once again, to tell you what that means, here is number one movie in America rules secretary. What would you call the parliamentarian.
So when two out of the three of us hit bingo, what we do is we come in with potential films for a listener / podcaster's choice episode. We're trying to get down to four films to go into a Twitter poll. So Sean and I have both brought in four movies from our master list of number one movies in America. We are going to present them one at a time. Sean and I each have two vetoes. We will not know the full list, and we will just have to say each time yes or no regarding if we're going to play our veto. If we end up with a list of more than four movies, meaning we don't play those vetoes, Camila will get to decide the final four.
Yay. It's the final countdown.
So we're going to draw one this week. As this episode drops, the poll will be live. It'll probably stay live for 3-4 days. You vote, and that will be not the next regular main episode you hear, but the one after that. I just did one of these, so Robin, kick it off.
Okay, the first movie that I have is The Craft.
Sure.
Okay.
If I vetoed it, it would just be because I felt I just watched it in October and then watched the new one, so feel like I watched it twice in a row.
Yeah.
But who can say no to The Craft?
Exactly.
It's, you know, it's too much a slice of, you know, the 90s in their purest form. The 90s are not where I'm going. I have a much different approach to this movie draft. I have not seen any of these movies. The general category that I get the most shit about having not seen is
cinematic classics,
semi-iconic movies from the 1980s. It's not cinematic classics. People aren't like, oh my God, you haven't seen Bringing Up Baby. People are like, oh my God, how have you not seen
Tootsie,
this thing that I watched 12 times in the 1980s? Because I was born in 1985 and I wasn't watching those movies when I was three, and different movies were on cable by the time I was watching cable. So I just selected four movies that a lot of people have seen and I have not, from the 1980s.
Okay.
We will start with Cocktail.
Oh, interesting.
I recently watched Cocktail. I am not going to veto this, but I am going to warn you and our listeners that it's bad.
I have also, within the last 6 months, I have done my own podcast on Cocktail.
Wait, why?
Because I have a friend who has a tequila company and wanted him to be on the show. Oh. And so I was like, watch Cocktail and we'll review that and then we'll talk about your tequila.
Oh, that's a really cool premise. Do you agree that it's bad?
Yes.
Okay. Well, it's not vetoed, but why do I feel it's not going to make the final four? Anyway.
I don't know. Somebody likes it.
All right. My next is Collateral, the 2004 Tom Cruise and Jamie Foxx Michael Mann movie. And I picked that because I've been watching or rewatching Michael Mann movies, and I keep not watching that one because I'm like, I remember this one being really good. I want to watch it when I'm really paying attention to it. So I thought this would be killing two birds with one stone.
I'm going to use a veto on Collateral.
Wow.
Why?
It might be good. Like, I only saw it in the theaters. I remember not loving it. That could be completely wrong. If we landed on it naturally, great. But in my four movies and now your two, this is the only one where I'm like, if that's what we got, I would not be pumped. And it's also for the moment where Tom Cruise lists notable jazz performers and sounds like the world's biggest Tool doing it. That is the main reason for my veto.
Part of the reason Tom I Cruise love tries that movie. To say the name. I love that movie because it uses Tom Cruise the way that Gone Girl uses Ben Affleck. It's like everything that's bad about you, we're going to put on display.
Right, right.
That said, he says the phrase Charles Mingus, and I'm like, you have no idea who that is. You stop. Stop. You listen to Paul Anka, probably. My second is Private Benjamin.
I'm definitely not vetoing that. That was on my short list. That was in the seven from which I drew my four.
Not only am I very curious about it, if the long time listeners will remember the what was the best movie year ever episode of You Can't Handle the Truth, where I picked 1980. That's one I haven't seen from 1980. So Your third
is also a movie from the 80s, and it is Witness.
Ooh.
Oh, which one's that?
It's Harrison Ford is protecting a little Amish boy who witnessed a crime. And there's an impossible really want to see love affair, my favorite plot.
It's I want to see that more than half of mine. So it's my third is Conan the Barbarian. Yeah. Is it good? I don't know. Seems interesting.
I'm going to veto because I have two available to me. And I the same thing as with Collateral. I'm like, if that wins, I'm going to be kind of bummed.
Word.
Okay.
And my last one is going to get vetoed.
I've just been curious ever since a kid I knew in college got in trouble with the school for for illegally downloading movies, and it was only to prove to someone that the opening scene of Conan the Barbarian is really good. Like, they got in a drunk conversation where he was like, it's not good, but the opening scene is amazing. And the other guy was like, no way. And he said, I'll show you right now. And illegally downloaded Conan the Barbarian and got in big trouble just for making that point.
I'll show you right now.
I don't even remember if it is.
Downloaded it. So what, 12 hours later, he proved his point?
Exactly. Like, I forgot we were talking about that, dude. Right. I don't
That's
care.
That's how we used to argue about things, right? Like, you know, before everybody carried around the internet in their pocket, it right. was like, well, I'll get back to you when I can check my books.
Right.
What's your number four?
Titanic.
No, I'm not going to veto that. Because, like, it's a good movie, and, I mean, it's very much in the spirit of our podcast. Probably be discussed at some point.
If I don't knock it off, it's solely for Billy Zane. This podcast is desperate for some Billy Zane.
You know what? It really is.
And finally, remember how in my first movie draft, I had A League of Their Own, and it didn't get through. And so then I brought it back my second one, and it didn't get through. I'm not doing that again. But in my first movie draft, I had The Natural, and it didn't get through, and it's back. Oh, The Natural is my fourth pick.
Veto.
All right.
Man.
Sorry.
Just
feeling harsh today.
Somebody remind me sometime that I can pick my own movies and watch them for no reason. Yeah. It doesn't have to be for a podcast.
It's
like, does it really happen then? Like, if you don't, right. If you don't talk or write about it and you've watched a movie, have you watched a movie?
You have. You truly haven't. So Camila has to knock off one choice. There are five that went unvetoed. They are Cocktail, Private Benjamin, The Craft, Witness, and Titanic. Four of those will be up to you to choose from. One will not. The one that will not is...
Cocktail.
Man!
I am.
Yeah, if you just did a thing about it.
Oh, shit. Is this whole list... Wait, is this whole list yours, Robin?
No, I got private.
Okay, that's right.
But that was also on my short list.
I'm telling you, like the Billy Zane love over here is strong. This is why Titanic is left on the list.
All right, I appreciate it.
And Zane always outweighs Cruise, always.
Mm-hmm. Well, those are your choices, and I don't know how this is going to go. I would not put a lot of money on Witness, but we could be surprised.
I would be surprised.
It is The Craft, Private Benjamin, Witness, and Titanic. Those are your choices.
Sweet.
For not the following episode, but the episode after that. Hop over to Twitter, at @number1moviepod, at @1. I'm sorry, I picked that handle, moviepod. Or look for one of
the
us.
The word number, the numeral one.
Right.
Yeah.
Movie plot.
I like this list. This
is now nice. I learned why people don't do that. No, it's this is interesting. I don't know the way it's good. I mean, last time we were it's probably coming to America.
Yeah.
This, don't know what's going to happen. So, before we get to that, we got to draw one. We are back to the full list. As a reminder, the only veto in play is the three-key veto that might well have been used last time, but nope, we watched Apocalypto. So will we be trigger-happy with it right now? It's interesting because this is, you know, one of the most recent things we've ever landed on. The selection is Freaky, the Vince Vaughn horror movie that was a number one movie in America during the pandemic.
Sweet.
Cool.
I talked about it a little bit on here. I liked it.
Camila, you watched it too, right?
Yeah, I liked it too. But now I will get in there. We'll get in there with a scalpel and find out if it really... Before it was just like, popcorn fun. Now we'll really see.
It's interesting because it's halfway between Friday the 13th and Freaky Friday, and it's called Freaky. And it takes place on Friday the 13th. They knew what they were doing with this movie. That's the point. They knew exactly what they were doing. No, it's a good opportunity to talk about pandemic era number ones. A bizarre subcategory. I think that'll be fun.
Yeah.
In the meantime, before we get out of here, Apocalypto was number one in December of 2006. What was the number one song in America when America briefly went, what's that movie about? Oh, never mind.
2006, what was I doing?
This is 100% my darkest year of my actual lifetime regarding pop music, because this was when I lived in Seattle and I exclusively listened to their classic rock station.
2006, I think I was still going to bars and clubs at this point in time. Promiscuous?
Oh, that song's awesome.
Yeah.
No, you're in the right sphere. But I'll tell you, I don't particularly remember this song. Mm. Promiscuous is a much more memorable song than whatever this is.
Was it Christina Aguilera?
No, we're looking for someone who was just famous for a minute in this era. Like, who was really big around this time and then not. A male with a lovely voice, with a lovely R&B choice. Who didn't?
Neo?
No, I frequently confuse Neo and this person.
Well, not Akon? Usher.
Oh. Right, Akon. I frequently confuse Neo and Akon.
I might have confused them just now.
I don't remember. I don't know any of his songs.
Yet, I will not know the answer to this.
Akon featuring a rapper that we've talked about very recently. One of the biggest hip-hop hitmakers of all time, who I've seen in concert, and I may have told the story about it twice on this podcast.
Lil Wayne?
No, not Dr. Dre, but...
Snoop Dogg?
Akon featuring Snoop Dogg with I Wanna Love You?
Sure.
Sure, that's a song.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
All right.
My only association with Akon, other than doing the hook for The Lonely Islands, I Just Had Sex. great job. I used to go to this karaoke night regularly in Oakland, and the karaoke host, would at least two or three times a night go up himself, like he wanted to perform, which is not really the job, but okay. And two times out of three, this was Akon. He would do an Akon song. He would sound pretty good. And every now and then, he would do Cult of Personality by Living Color. And one night, I forgot that, and I did Cult of Personality by Living Color, and he was really mad about it.
Oh, snap.
And I was like, dude, you're the Akon guy. Like, just stick with Akon. It's fine. There's many Akon songs, probably.
He's like, no, there's literally these three.
Sometimes I need to sing Living Color instead. I love Living Color. Well, I love Cult of Personality. There may or may not be a second Living Color song. No one knows.